Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a company that can take a fresh design from like a simple sketch to a bustling store shelf in just a matter of weeks.
Yeah, constantly refreshing its racks.
Almost magically, right? And captivating shoppers worldwide. That's the extraordinary power we're diving into today.
We're talking Industria de Diseño Textil S.A. Inditex.
Exactly, but far better known by its acronym Inditex. This is the Spanish global giant behind some really iconic fashion brands you probably know and maybe even love. Zara, obviously.
Pull&Bear, Massimo Dutti.
Several others, too. Its immense scale and truly global reach really set it apart in the cutthroat world of apparel retail.
Absolutely.
So our mission for this deep dive is basically to tear open a comprehensive investment research analysis that lays bare this fascinating company.
Getting right into the details.
We're going to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight, helping us not just understand what Inditex does, but how its uniquely agile business model works, what fueled its, undeniable successes.
And the challenges they're facing now.
Exactly, the fierce new challenges it faces from all directions, and perhaps most importantly, what all of this means for the future of global fashion retail, and, well, for us as consumers.
And it's crucial to acknowledge right from the start that Inditex truly is and has long been a best-in-class operator, no question. Its deeply integrated model and superior profitability have historically distinguished it from nearly all its competitors. However, the analysis really highlights that it now stands at what you might call a strategic inflection point.
An inflection point. How so?
Well, we're witnessing new structural challenges emerge, particularly from a new breed of ultra-fast fashion disruptors like Shein, which are playing by entirely different rules, primarily online.
Right, the digital natives.
Beyond that, there are these profound, almost existential questions being posed by a rapidly growing consumer demand for, and regulatory focus on, sustainability. These forces challenge the very foundations of the traditional fast fashion model.
So it's coming from multiple angles.
Exactly. So while we'll certainly delve into Inditex's remarkable financial resilience, we'll also note a moderation in its sales growth, which subtly shifts the investment narrative from one of relentless, rapid expansion to one focused on durable, high-quality performance in a much more complex landscape.
Exactly. If you've ever found yourself wondering how your favorite fashion brands manage to get those new styles onto shelves so quickly, or what's really happening behind the scenes of the global apparel market, influencing everything from the prices you pay to the environmental impact of your clothes, well, then this deep dive is absolutely for you.
Yeah, we're pulling back the curtain.
We are. So let's jump right into section one, the Inditex phenomenon, a masterclass in retail agility and integration.
Okay.
And the first thing we simply have to understand about Inditex is that it's so much more than just Zara, the brand everyone knows.
Right, Zara gets all the headlines.
It does, but Inditex is the parent company, and it boasts a sheer breadth of brands within its portfolio, making it a truly diverse ecosystem, almost like a galaxy of fashion, actually.
A very deliberate strategy.
It seems so. To give you a real sense of this sprawling empire, let's walk through some of their primary brands and the distinct target demographics they meticulously aim for.
Okay.
Of course, at the very center, you have Zara, which also includes Zara Home now. This is the undisputed flagship, the brand that truly defines fast fashion for many
It
people,
really does.
offering the very latest fashion trends for women, men, children, and a rapidly expanding range of contemporary home goods. It's the biggest player in their stable, the engine room, basically.
Makes sense.
Then there's Pull&Bear. This one focuses on a more casual, relaxed fashion vibe, heavily inspired by international trends, specifically tailored for a young, trend-conscious audience looking for that sort of effortless style.
A younger demographic, yeah.
Then Massimo Dutti steps into a completely different arena. It targets a more sophisticated, urban, and elegant customer.
Higher price point, too, generally.
Yes, using higher quality materials and classic, timeless designs that appeal to a more discerning consumer. Bershka aims squarely at an even younger, more adventurous demographic, closely attuned to emerging trends in music, social media culture, street style, that whole vibe.
Very trend-driven.
Very. Stradivarius carves out its niche with feminine and fresh fashion for young women, focusing on romantic and contemporary aesthetics.
Got it.
And finally, rounding out this diverse lineup, Orsho specializes in lingerie, sleepwear, beachwear, and sportswear, capturing yet another distinct market segment catering to comfort and wellness.
So a really broad church there.
A very broad church.
What's truly fascinating here, though, and a crucial insight from the analysis, is how this diversified portfolio serves as a strategic strength. It's much more than just a collection of brands.
Right. It's not just stamp collecting.
Not at all. While Zara's dominance is undeniable, I mean, generating $27.8 billion in sales in fiscal year 2024, that's about 72% of total revenue.
Wow.
And contributing $5.4 billion in profit before tax, or PBT, that's basically the profit before the government takes its share, and other financial items making up 71.4% of the group's PBT.
Still huge.
Absolutely massive. But the analysis really highlights the often underestimated importance of the smaller brands as growth stabilizers.
Ah, okay. So they balance things out.
Precisely. Look at Stradivarius, which saw a remarkable 14.1% sales growth, and Bershka with 11.8% sales growth in FY 2024. Both significantly outpaced Zara's 6.6% growth that year.
That's a big difference.
It is. And this isn't just a side note. It's a brilliant hedging strategy. These brands capture different market segments, different tastes, different budgets. They provide a critical cushion against potential fashion misses or maybe slower growth at the flagship brand.
So if Zara has an off-season.
Exactly. These other brands can pick up some of the slack. They allow Inditex to compete across multiple price points and demographics simultaneously, making the overall business far more resilient and, you know, less susceptible to the fickle whims of a single trend or a single brand underperforming.
And that's precisely why you, as a consumer and an observer of the market, should care about these smaller brands. They're not just afterthoughts.
Definitely not.
They demonstrate how a company can adapt and capture growth across a truly diverse spectrum of tastes, age groups, and price points, making the overall business more robust and less reliant on just one powerhouse brand.
It's about spreading risk, intelligently tapping into a wider consumer base, building long-term stability.
Yeah, makes sense. Now let's dive into what truly makes Inditex tick, what has been its defining characteristic for so long. The fast fashion engine, its vertically integrated secret weapon.
The magic formula, some might say.
Perhaps. This isn't just a fancy term. This is the core of Inditex's enduring competitive advantage. A highly responsive and vertically integrated business model.
Meaning they control pretty much everything.
Right. What that means is they control almost every step, from design through manufacturing, right down to distribution and retail. Mm-hmm. They cut out middlemen and boost speed, which is fundamentally different from what most of its peers do. The company itself defines this model by four key pillars. A unique product proposition, an enhanced customer experience, a strong focus on sustainability, we'll come back to that, and the talent of its people.
Okay.
But at its beating heart, its core operational strength lies in its unique capacity to react to nascent fashion trends in real time, almost as they emerge on social media or, you know, in street style.
Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. A central element of this incredibly agile model is what we call proximity sourcing.
Okay, explain that.
Historically, about half of Inditex's manufacturing factories, to be precise, 49% back in 2022, are located in close geographic regions to its headquarters in Spain. So
yeah.
Spain, Portugal, Morocco, or Turkey.
Ah, keeping production close.
Exactly. The direct immense benefit of this is unparalleled speed to market. We're talking about moving a fresh design from the drawing board, where an idea is first sketched, to the retail floor, ready for you to buy, in just a matter of weeks.
Weeks, not months.
Precisely. This geographical concentration allows for incredibly small initial production runs of new styles, which is absolutely key to the whole model.
And this feeds directly into their famous test and repeat approach, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Imagine this. They produce a limited quantity of a new item, maybe just a few thousand units.
Test the waters.
Test the waters. Mm. Then data on what's selling well, what's flying off the shelves, is fed back to designers and production facilities almost instantly.
Real-time feedback loop.
It allows for rapid replenishment of popular items, scaling up production quickly, but just as importantly, the immediate cancellation of unsuccessful ones before they become, you know, piles of unsold inventory.
Cut your losses fast.
It's an incredibly agile, data-driven cycle, almost like a living organism responding to its environment.
And the impact of this approach is profound for their bottom line. It dramatically reduces inventory risk for the company.
Because they're not overcommitting.
Exactly. They're not committing to massive production runs before knowing what consumers actually want. This, in turn, minimizes the need for those margin-eroding end-of-season markdowns that can really eat into a traditional retailer's profits.
Those big sale signs everywhere.
Think about those, yeah. For many retailers, that's them desperately trying to clear inventory. Inditex avoids much of that pain. This operational model is a key differentiator, a true competitive moat that allows Inditex to maintain superior profitability compared to its rivals, simply because they don't have mountains of unwanted clothes sitting around.
And it doesn't stop at production, does it? This agile model is meticulously supported by a highly centralized logistics network.
The nerve center.
Right. All products, no matter where they were manufactured, even those made further afield, are sent to enormous logistics hubs located in Spain.
Everything comes back home first.
From these central points, they are then distributed to stores worldwide not just once a week, but an astonishing twice a week.
Twice a week? That's incredible.
It ensures a constant, almost dizzying refreshment of merchandise on the shop floor, giving you, the customer, a compelling reason to visit more frequently. You always see something new, always feel like you're on the cutting edge.
Keeps the excitement high.
And to ensure this continues to scale, Inditex is currently executing a significant logistics expansion plan. They're investing a staggering $900 million per year in both 2024 and 2025 just to increase capacity.
Serious money.
Huge investment. This includes the massive new 286,000 square meter Zaragoza 2 distribution center, which is set to become operational in the summer of 2025. That's a colossal investment in maintaining that speed advantage.
Underpinning the whole model.
So when you think about it, consider how quickly trends change on social media. Just yesterday, my niece was showing me some micro trend on TikTok that's probably already out today.
Probably.
This model Inditex has built is literally designed to react to that, giving you the latest styles almost as soon as you see them online. It feels almost like magic, appearing on shelves in what feels like an instant.
It's an unparalleled race against time, really.
It is. But Inditex's ambition goes beyond just getting clothes to shelves quickly. They're also fundamentally revolutionizing how we shop, blurring the lines between online and in-store with what they call omnichannel evolution, when physical and digital become one.
Not just separate channels anymore.
No, their approach isn't about choosing between physical stores and e-commerce. It's explicitly about creating a fully integrated store and online business model, seeing them as two sides of the same highly synchronized coin.
Makes sense in today's world.
And at the heart of this integration is the company's proprietary integrated stock management system, Cinti.
Right, Cint.
This sophisticated system is truly clever. It allows online customer orders to be fulfilled from either a central online warehouse or, and here's the genius part, the stockroom of a nearby physical store.
Ah, using the store inventory for online orders.
Exactly.
And this integration, it dramatically increases product availability for online customers because they can draw from a much larger distributed pool of inventory. It's not just what's in the central warehouse.
Much wider reach.
It also shortens delivery times, getting items to you faster, and significantly improves the efficiency of store inventory, turning what might otherwise be, you know, stagnant stock into available merchandise.
Makes the stores work harder.
It truly blurs the lines between online and offline shopping, creating a seamless, almost invisible experience for you, the customer. You don't really care where it comes from, only that you get it quickly right.
Right. Convenience is king. And this integrated approach is driving their evolving store portfolio optimization strategy.
Moving beyond just more stores.
Exactly. Rather than simply trying to maximize the sheer number of stores they have, Inditex is focused on increasing its gross commercial space through a carefully curated network of larger, better located, and technologically advanced flagship stores.
Quality over quantity.
And the results really speak for themselves. Since the end of FY 2022, sales have grown a remarkable 19%.
Wow, 19%?
With 4% fewer stores.
Fewer stores, more sales. That's efficiency.
It really is. In FY 2024 alone, the actual store count declined by 2.3%, while commercial space grew by 2.0%, and crucially, store sales increased by 5.9%. This clearly demonstrates the success of this strategic shift.
And these flagship locations, they're being transformed from just simple points of sale into high-value omnichannel hubs.
More than just a shop.
Much more. They serve multiple critical functions. They're immersive brand showcases, drawing you in with captivating experiences. They act as logistical assets for online fulfillment, enabling faster delivery from local stock.
Like mini distribution centers.
Exactly. And they're crucial centers for customer services like returns and convenient click and collect. This store as a strategic asset doctrine creates a powerful competitive moat, a significant advantage that pure-play online retailers simply cannot easily replicate.
Because they don't have that physical footprint.
Right. They lack that crucial physical presence and the integrated network that makes it all work together.
And technology is a key enabler here, making your experience even smoother. We're seeing significant in-store technology initiatives like the new soft tag security system.
Ah, yes, the tags.
This has already been fully implemented in Zara and is now being rolled out to Bershka and Pull&Bear in 2025. This technology is designed to improve your customer experience by enabling seamless product interaction and facilitating smoother self-checkout processes and automated collection points.
Making it less hassle to shop.
Less friction. And on the digital front, Inditex is expanding its customer engagement with initiatives like Zara's live streaming shopping service.
Big in China, wasn't it?
Huge in China. After a successful launch there, this is now being introduced in the US, UK, and other key Western markets, bringing the in-store experience right to your screen, blending entertainment with retail.
Interesting move.
So think about it. Have you ever ordered something online and picked it up in store almost immediately? Or found exactly what you needed because a local store had it in stock even when the website initially showed it as unavailable.
Yeah, that's happened.
Right. That's this integrated model in action designed to make your shopping experience seamless and incredibly convenient, leveraging every asset the company has to serve you better.
Very smart.
Now let's broaden our perspective a bit and move into section two. Navigating a shifting fashion landscape, challenges and responses.
Okay, the external environment.
So we've seen how Inditex operates, this incredibly efficient machine, but no company, no matter how agile, exists in a vacuum, right?
Absolutely not.
What are the external forces, the seismic shifts in the global fashion landscape that are now challenging even this giant? Let's turn our attention to the dynamic global apparel market itself.
It's huge.
We need to grasp the sheer scale of this industry. It's a massive market, well over $1 trillion U.S. dollars annually. Projections range from like USD 1.47 trillion in 2025 to USD 1.66 trillion by 2030.
Or even higher, some forecasts say.
Yeah, some suggest a compound annual growth rate, or AGR, of over 10% between 2025 and 2032. It's a huge, ever-evolving beast, constantly being reshaped.
And within this colossal and dynamic market, there are powerful secular trends currently reshaping the entire industry. You really have to understand these.
Okay, what are the key ones?
First, digitalization and omnichannel integration are paramount. Online channels are exhibiting the fastest growth, projected AGR of maybe 4.37% through 2030. But this isn't just about having an e-commerce website anymore.
It's deeper than that.
It necessitates sophisticated omnichannel capabilities that seamlessly blend the physical and digital shopping experience, meeting customers wherever they are, making every interaction count. Second, and this is a profound and arguably existential shift, is sustainability and circularity.
The green pressure.
Huge pressure. We're seeing a significant change in both consumer sentiment and regulatory frameworks. Shoppers, particularly younger demographics, increasingly prefer brands with transparent and ethical production practices. They're demanding more circular models, moving away from the old take, make, dispose mentality.
Which directly challenges fast fashion.
Fundamentally, This trend poses a direct, fundamental challenge to the traditional fast fashion model, forcing companies to rethink their entire product lifecycle, from sourcing materials to what happens at the end of a garment's life.
And the third trend.
Third. Changing consumer preferences are always at play, of course. The post-pandemic era seems to have solidified a preference for more comfortable and versatile clothing, you know, athleisure or casualization.
Sweatpants are forever.
Uh-huh, maybe. But crucially, social media has dramatically accelerated trend cycles. Micro-influencers can now drive immediate and mass demand for specific items almost overnight.
Making reaction times even shorter.
Exactly. Yeah. Compressing design-to-delivery timelines even further. And creating these hyper-fragmented micro-markets, it's relentless.
It's also worth noting that geographically, the Asia-Pacific region is consistently identified as both the largest and fastest-growing market globally.
Massive potential there.
Driven by rapidly rising urban incomes and a burgeoning middle-class population, making it a critical area for any global retailer looking for future expansion. It's where a huge amount of potential lies.
Can't ignore Asia Pacific.
And these aren't just abstract trends, right? They profoundly influence what you buy, how you buy it, and even how often you stop to consider the environmental impact of your clothes.
They're shaping everything.
They're shaping the entire industry, from the production lines of factories right down to your very own shopping cart, making every purchasing decision a small part of a much larger shift.
Definitely something to think about.
Next, we move into the competitive arena. This is a fiercely competitive environment for Inditex, pinning it against a diverse set of players, from established giants to these nimble digital-first disruptors.
A real battlefield.
First, let's look at the traditional fast fashion peers. The most direct competitors here are clearly H&M and Fast Retailing, which of course owns Uniqlo.
The old guard, so to speak.
These are the players Inditex has been battling for market share for decades.
And Inditex has historically maintained a significant performance advantage over H&M, consistently delivering higher growth and, crucially, superior profitability.
Better margins.
Much better. The performance gap in gross and EBIT, that's operating profit margins in particular, has actually widened in the post-pandemic period. It really underscores Inditex's more resilient business model.
Interesting. What about Uniqlo?
Uniqlo's a bit different. With its lifewear focus on high-quality basics and classic designs, it represents a different value proposition entirely. It's not directly competing on those ultra-fast trends in the same way.
More timeless stuff.
Right. But it's still a formidable global competitor, especially with its strong presence in those high-growth Asian markets we just mentioned.
Okay, so Inditex has these formidable traditional rivals. But then comes Shein, this digital-native, ultra-fast fashion behemoth. This isn't just another competitor, is it?
No, it really isn't.
What makes Shein's threat fundamentally different and almost existential for a company like Inditex that prides itself on speed?
You've hit on the core issue. Shein represents a fundamentally different cost and production paradigm. Their disruptive model is quite fascinating, really.
How does it work?
They leverage a data-driven, almost on-demand production system that allows them to launch literally thousands of new Scalvi's unique product styles daily.
Thousands a day.
Thousands. And crucially, at exceptionally low prices. To put that in perspective, Shein's average Scalvi price of around $14 is less than half of Zara's average of about $34.
Wow, that's a massive price gap.
It's huge. It creates a whole new level of price competition, particularly at the entry level of the market.
And that model has been effective.
Extremely. This aggressive pricing and hyper-responsive model have allowed Shein to rapidly capture market share, especially among Gen Z consumers. In the U.S., for instance, Shein accounted for a staggering 50% of sales among key fast fashion competitors by late 2022.
Half the market share among those players.
That's right. This fundamentally different cost and production paradigm operates on a scale and speed that even Inditex finds challenging to match directly. Primarily because Shein doesn't carry the same physical store footprint or the associated overheads. They're almost entirely digital.
So how is Inditex responding? Are they just trying to cut prices at Zara?
It doesn't seem like it, actually. Inditex's strategic response appears to be what we might call a barbell approach.
Barbell.
Yeah, weighting the ends. Rather than engaging in a potentially margin-destroying price war directly with Zara, the company seems to be elevating the flagship brand's positioning.
Making Zara more premium?
Kind of. A greater emphasis on quality, unique design, and that enhanced in-store experience that Shein simply can't offer with its purely online model.
Right, leveraging the physical stores.
Exactly. Simultaneously, it is leveraging its more affordable brands like Bershka and Pull&Bear, and even expanding its budget brand Lefties to compete more directly in that highly price-sensitive segment where Shein thrives.
Ah, so fighting Shein with the lower-priced brands.
Seems to be the strategy. It's a very nuanced and clever way to fight on multiple fronts without cannibalizing Zara's improving image.
This is a classic business battle playing out right in your closet, isn't it? Do you go for the super cheap, ultra-fast trend from a digital native, or do you prefer a slightly more premium, curated, and integrated experience?
That's the choice.
Inditex is trying to offer you both, in a way, demonstrating a nuanced and strategic approach to an evolving market that acknowledges the different needs and budgets of today's consumers.
Adapting to survive.
Let's shift gears now to broader challenges. Macroeconomic headwinds. Navigating the global storm. The period from 2022 to 2024 has been characterized by significant global economic volatility, right?
Definitely choppy waters.
Which has, of course, impacted the retail sector across the board, even for a company as robust as Inditex.
No one's immune.
We saw challenges with inflation and consumer spending. Inditex was pretty proactive here, though. They swiftly raised prices to offset rising input costs for materials and labor.
And they got away with it, mostly.
Crucially, they were largely successful in passing these costs on to consumers without significantly impacting demand, which actually led to them achieving record profit margins in 2023.
Testament to their brand strength.
It really is. But
yes, we must acknowledge that persistent inflation continues to erode consumers' real disposable income. People just have less money to spend after essentials.
Right.
This remains a significant headwind for discretionary spending on apparel, even for a company as strong as Inditex. When people have less money in their pockets, they tend to think twice about buying new clothes.
Maybe wear last year's coat again.
Exactly. Opting to extend the life of existing garments or prioritize essentials. This broader economic pressure is an ongoing concern.
And the company has also faced fluctuating input costs and supply chain disruptions, haven't they?
Yeah, the whole world has felt that.
This includes variable prices for raw materials like cotton, as well as increased freight and energy costs. A very specific example illustrates this perfectly. The Red Sea disruptions in late 2023 and early 2024.
Caused chaos for shipping.
It did. These forced Inditex to rely more on the significantly more expensive air freight to maintain its crucial speed to market.
Speed costs money.
It certainly did here. This resulted in a 10% increase in transport-related emissions in FY 2024, showing both the challenges they face and the very real trade-offs they sometimes have to make to uphold their business model.
So it hit the bottom line and the environmental scorecard.
Exactly. It's not just a logistical headache. It's a real-world dilemma.
Yep.
Maintain the speed that defines your brand, or take the more environmentally friendly but slower sea route. It's a very tangible trade-off.
A tough balancing act.
These are the real-world costs and challenges that directly affect the prices you see on the tags in stores and the overall environmental footprint of your clothes. They show that even giants like Inditex aren't immune to global economic shifts and their complex ripple effects. They're constantly adapting their strategies.
Constant vigilance required.
We're now moving into section three. Financial strength and strategic investments building for the future. Let's start with a deep dive into revenue and profitability.
Okay, let's look under the hood.
Inditex has demonstrated a really robust financial performance from 2022 through 2024, characterized by strong growth, expanding profitability, and exceptional returns. However,
there's always a however.
It's important to note that the most recent data signals a moderation, a deceleration in some of these trends.
I'm slowing down a bit.
Now, shifting to the numbers, Inditex has shown remarkable growth, but I'm looking at these revenue trends for the first quarter of FY 2025 and seeing a significant slowdown, just 1.5% growth.
Yeah, 5.3% if you adjust for the leap year effect, but still.
Still much slower, reaching $8.3 billion. What does that sudden deceleration tell us about the broader economic headwinds? Is that a red flag for future performance or just a normalization after a big surge?
That's a crucial observation, and it probably tells us a few things. While the prior years, FY 2022 and FY 2023, saw really impressive sales growth, 17.5% and 10.4% respectively.
Big numbers.
Reaching record highs, that was largely driven by a strong post-pandemic rebound. FY 2024, with its 7.5% increase to $38.6 billion, still demonstrated healthy growth, but that Q1 FY 2025 slowdown suggests the company is indeed facing tougher year-over-year comparisons.
Harder to keep growing at that pace.
Exactly. And the consumer environment is more challenging globally, with that persistent inflation we mentioned earlier impacting discretionary spending. So this isn't necessarily a red flag for the company's underlying strength, but it does indicate a return to more normalized and perhaps lower growth trajectory compared to that exceptional post-pandemic surge.
Right, reality setting in a bit. There have also been interesting shifts in the geographical mix of these sales. Europe, excluding Spain, grew its share from 47.5% in FY 2022 to 50.6% in FY 2024. It's becoming an even larger piece of the pie.
Europe's still core.
Meanwhile, over the same period, the Americas share slightly decreased from 20.0% to 18.6%, and Asia and rest of world share fell from 18.1% to 15.7%.
So Europe gaining share, others losing a bit. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this subtle shift could indicate a couple things, and understanding why is absolutely crucial.
What are the possibilities?
It might point to a strategic focus on their strong core European market, where they already have significant infrastructure and deep brand presence, making growth perhaps more efficient there. Or, equally likely, it could be a reflection of specific regional headwinds the company's encountering in the Americas and Asia,
making those markets tougher.
Yeah, maybe harder to grow right now, perhaps due to local competition or specific economic conditions in those regions. And understanding this subtle shift is really key because it directly informs where Inditex's future growth opportunities or perhaps significant hurdles are likely to emerge in the coming years. It guides their strategic investments.
Okay, makes sense. Despite this moderation in revenue growth, though, what's truly remarkable is that Inditex's profitability has remained exceptionally strong and remarkably resilient.
This is where their model really shines.
It seems so. The gross margin, for instance, has been incredibly stable and impressive. It was 57.0% in FY 2022, 57.8% in FY 2023, and stay at 57.8% in FY 2024.
Very consistent.
And in the first quarter of 2025, it actually reached a decade high of 60.6%.
60% gross margin for fashion retail is phenomenal.
It is. Operating, or EBIT, margin rose from 16.9% in FY 2022 to 19.7% in FY 2024, and net margin climbed from 12.7% to 15.3% over the same period. These are truly impressive figures for the sector.
And this resilience and profitability, even as sales growth moderates, points to several critical strengths. It signals strong pricing discipline, they can set prices effectively, and command value for their products.
People are willing to pay.
And it underscores the structural benefit of their agile supply chain. By minimizing excess inventory through that test and repeat model we talked about, they dramatically reduce the need for promotional sales, which often eat into margins for other retailers.
Less discounting needed.
Exactly. This is a core part of their financial strength, allowing them to maintain that healthy gap between their revenue and their costs.
So even as sales growth moderates, the company is actually getting more efficient and more profitable with each sale it makes.
Pretty much, yeah.
This indicates a very well-managed operation capable of extracting maximum value from its unique business model, almost like a finely tuned machine.
Very well put.
Let's delve deeper into operational efficiency and exceptional returns. Inditex's operational efficiency isn't just a buzzword. It's a cornerstone of its financial success, directly translating into outstanding returns for the business and its shareholders.
It's where the rubber meets the road financially.
A key strength here, which we've touched upon, is their incredible inventory management. At the close of FY 2023, inventory levels were actually down a healthy 7% year over year, despite sales growth.
Selling more with less stock.
Exactly. What's even more impressive and a clear differentiator is that the company's inventory turnover is approximately 50% faster than that of its main rival, H&M.
50% faster. That's huge.
It's a huge difference in how quickly they move products through the system.
And this exceptional inventory efficiency means Inditex operates with significantly less working capital. Basically, they don't have as much of their money just sitting idle, tied up in unsold goods in warehouses or on shelves.
Cash isn't trapped in inventory.
Right. That, as you can imagine, is a huge advantage. It frees up capital that would otherwise be stagnant, allowing them to reinvest that money into other growth-driving initiatives like those logistics hubs or new technologies we mentioned.
More firepower for investment.
It speaks volumes about the agility and precision of their supply chain.
These efficiencies translate directly into stellar returns on capital, their return on capital employed, or ROCE.
A key metric.
Which essentially measures how effectively the company is using all its invested capital, stores, warehouses, inventory to generate profits, increased from an already impressive 33% in FY 2022 to 39% in FY 2023. 39%
ROCE is outstanding.
It is. Return on equity, or ROE, which measures how much profit the company generates for each dollar of shareholder equity, followed a similar trajectory, rising from 25% to 30% over the same period.
So highly profitable use of capital. This raises an important question. What do these numbers really tell us beyond the headline figures?
Yeah, what's the story behind the numbers?
These consistently high and improving returns are a clear indicator of a strong competitive moat. It shows exceptionally efficient capital allocation. The company is generating a lot of value from every single dollar invested back into the business.
They're getting bang for their buck.
Absolutely. It's a testament to the effectiveness of their integrated model. It signifies that Inditex has a distinct and defensible advantage that competitors struggle to replicate, allowing them to earn outsized profits from their operations year after year.
Absolutely. High returns on capital mean the company is using its money incredibly effectively to generate more money, which is always a clear sign of a healthy, well-run business with a distinct advantage in its market. It's a mark of true operational mastery.
Couldn't agree more.
Now, let's look at robust cash flow and strategic capital allocation. Inditex's business model is, well, it's a real cash machine.
Just churns it out.
It just consistently churns out piles of cash, giving them incredible financial wiggle room to ride out storms or jump on exciting new opportunities without missing a beat.
Financial flexibility is key.
We can see this in their robust cash flow from operations, which was $6.7 billion in FY 2022, rising to $8.7 billion in FY 2023, and still strong at $7.5 billion in FY 2024. Those are massive figures.
And this strong cash generation is crucial because it allows the company to self-fund its extensive investments without relying heavily on external debt.
Right.
That gives them immense financial independence.
They don't need to borrow much.
Right. It helps them maintain a fortress balance sheet, and critically, it enables them to provide attractive and consistent shareholder returns through dividends. They're not just growing, they're paying their investors well, too.
And their financial strength is undeniable. Inditex ended FY 2024 with a net cash position of $11.5
billion. $11.5 billion in net cash.
Meaning they hold significantly more cash than debt on their books. This gives them immense stability and strategic flexibility. Their growth vectors now seem focused on deepening penetration in existing markets and selectively expanding in high-potential regions, all while continually enhancing those omnichannel capabilities.
A very targeted, thoughtful growth strategy. Not just growth for growth's sake.
Exactly. To get more specific on these growth vectors, their physical store strategy has evolved beyond simply opening more stores to focusing on gross space growth. They're targeting approximately 5% annually for the 2024-2026 period.
Bigger, better stores.
Right. This means strategically closing smaller, less productive stores and instead opening or enlarging flagship stores in prime, high-traffic locations. The United States, for example, has emerged as a key growth market for them. It's now the company's second largest.
Big push in the U.S.
With plans for further store openings. Asia also remains a focus for geographic expansion, with recent entries like the first Zara store in Uzbekistan and the first Bershka store in India.
Expanding selectively.
On the digital growth front, it's propelled by continuous investment in online platforms and the development of the Inditex Open platform.
What's it?
It's a new modular digital architecture designed to improve real-time responsiveness to customer needs and integrate their systems even further. The company is also experimenting with new forms of digital engagement, like those live streaming shopping events we mentioned earlier.
Trying new things online.
Blurring the lines between entertainment and commerce. And, of course, underpinning all this is the significant logistics investment we discussed. That extraordinary two-year program, allocating $900 million in both 2024 and 2025 to expand logistics capacity, supporting all future omnichannel growth globally.
Investing heavily in the backbone.
They really are.
And Inditex's capital allocation policy really reflects that of a mature, high-quality business. It prioritizes reinvestment back into the business at those high rates of return we discussed, ensuring continued operational excellence and growth.
Feeding the golden goose.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
This is followed by a consistent and growing dividend for shareholders, all while meticulously maintaining that strong balance sheet. It's a very disciplined and balanced approach, signaling confidence in their ability to generate future profits.
So what about capital expenditure, or CapEx, for the coming year?
Right. For FY 2025, ordinary CapEx is estimated at approximately $1.8 billion.
Okay.
This is directed mainly toward optimizing commercial space, technological integration, and improvements to online platforms.
Making things better, not just bigger.
Exactly. In addition to those extraordinary logistics investments we keep mentioning, this demonstrates a clear shift from simply adding more stores to making the existing asset base better and more productive, focusing on efficiency and quality.
And the dividend.
The dividend policy is a core component of shareholder returns. It consists of a 60% ordinary payout ratio supplemented by bonus dividends when things are going well.
Sharing the success.
For FY 2024, the board proposed a healthy 9% increase in the total dividend to 1.68 per share, reflecting strong confidence in the company's financial strength and future prospects.
Now, what's truly fascinating here and a unique aspect of Inditex's story is their real estate strategy, isn't it?
Ah, yes, the Panagiria connection.
Explain that. While the vast majority of its stores are leased, the Ortega family's private investment firm, Pantegadea, which is an entity entirely separate from Inditex.
Important distinction.
Actually owns many of the flagship properties that Inditex brands occupy. In 2022, these real estate assets were valued at a staggering $18.1 billion.
Wow. So the family owns the buildings Zara rents.
In many prime locations, yes. This creates a kind of symbiotic landlord-tenant relationship where the family benefits from the real estate value appreciation and rent, and the company benefits from stable access to prime locations, even though these assets are held by Ponte Gadea and not directly on Inditex's balance sheet.
Very clever structure. Ensures prime spots long term.
It seems so. This truly shows how a company with such significant cash isn't just sitting on it. They're strategically reinvesting to make the business even stronger for the long term, pushing the boundaries of retail while consistently rewarding their shareholders through a robust dividend. It's a testament to long-term vision.
A well-oiled machine, financially speaking.
Now we move to Section 4, the road ahead, risks, and valuation in a changing world. Because no business, no matter how strong or well-run, is entirely without risks.
There never is. Always something lurking.
Inditex faces a complex array of challenges, almost like navigating a minefield, stemming from the dynamic nature of the fashion industry, its vast global operational footprint, and the constantly evolving regulatory and competitive landscapes.
Lots to keep an eye on.
Let's start with operational and market risks. The primary inherent risk for Inditex, as for any fashion retailer, is fashion and inventory risk.
Getting the trends wrong.
Exactly. The failure to accurately predict and respond to fashion trends, which can lead to excess inventory and costly markdowns, basically selling clothes that nobody wants. But
But, as we discussed, their agile supply chain and that test and repeat model are its core mitigation strategies against this. It minimizes that exposure significantly compared to others.
right, they're built to handle that better. Then there's economic sensitivity. As a purveyor of consumer discretionary goods, Inditex's sales are sensitive to macroeconomic downturns, periods of high inflation, and declining consumer confidence.
People cut back on clothes when times are tough.
It's often one of the first things. Currency exposure is also a significant factor. Operating in 214 markets, but reporting all its results in euros, exposes the company to significant foreign exchange volatility.
Fluctuating exchange rates can really hit the numbers.
They can. For FY 2025, for instance, the company has guided for a -3% currency impact on sales, which is a material headwind just from FX movement.
Takes a chunk out of reported growth.
And finally, under operations, logistics concentration. The heavy reliance on those centralized logistics centers in Spain creates a significant operational risk.
All the eggs in a few Spanish baskets.
Pretty much. A major disruption at one of these key hubs could be a natural disaster, a labor strike, an infrastructure failure could severely impact global distribution and their crucial speed to market.
A single point of failure risk.
It's a concentration risk, definitely. Beyond operations, we have geopolitical and regulatory landscape risks. We saw this with geopolitical tensions when the company exited Russia in 2022.
A big market for them previously.
It was a previously profitable market, and the exit resulted in a 231 million BTL provision and the loss of that significant market. While operations in Ukraine resumed in April 2024, that whole episode really highlights the ongoing risks of operating in politically unstable regions.
Part of being a global company.
Also, the labor market and wage inflation pose challenges. Inditex is exposed to labor market dynamics, particularly in its home market of Spain. In early 2023, following union pressure, it agreed to an average 20% pay increase for Spanish store staff.
20%, that's substantial.
It added an estimated $167 million in annual operating costs. This underscores the persistent risk of wage inflation impacting operating expenses globally.
Rising costs are a constant battle.
Now, this brings us to what I consider to be the big one, expert, sustainability regulations. This is arguably the critical and escalating long-term structural risk for the entire fast fashion industry, and by extension, for Inditex.
Absolutely, this is huge.
We're not just talking about good PR here, are we? Governments, particularly within the EU, are actively introducing stringent regulations related to environmental due diligence, product circularity aimed at waste reduction, and comprehensive carbon emissions reporting.
The regulatory vise is tightening.
These regulations could fundamentally challenge the very core of the high-volume, rapid-turnover fast fashion model. How confident are we that these ambitious targets Inditex has set and that $2 billion investment they've earmarked are truly enough to transform their model without fundamentally impacting their defining speed or their profitability, especially given their historical reliance on that rapid turnover?
You've hit on the critical tension right there. The immediate impact of these regulations would undoubtedly be increased costs and new operational requirements across the entire supply chain. No way around that.
It's going to cost more.
However, Inditex is being remarkably proactive, not just with rhetoric, but with concrete plans. They've set ambitious sustainability targets, net zero emissions by 2040, committing to using only lower impact fibers by 2030.
Big goals.
And they put a number on it, estimating that this transition will require a significant financial investment of around $2 billion by 2030. This isn't just greenwashing. It seems like a necessary evolution they're taking seriously.
But can they do it without losing their edge?
That's the billion-dollar question, or rather the 2 billion euro question. The implication here is profound. Failure to adapt carries not only significant regulatory penalties, but also immense reputational risk in a world of increasingly conscious consumers. You fall behind, you get hammered.
Customers walk away.
Exactly. Conversely, though, a successful and genuine transition could become a new and powerful source of competitive differentiation for Inditex. It could distinguish them from less adaptable rivals and potentially become a new competitive moat in itself. It's a costly, complex, but absolutely essential transformation.
So a massive challenge, but maybe also an opportunity to lead.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
If they get it right.
This truly isn't just about greenwashing or marketing. These are real, tangible regulatory and consumer pressures that could force a fundamental shift in how clothes are made and sold. It could affect everything from your shopping choices to the prices you pay at the register.
It's a massive challenge and opportunity for the whole industry, and Inditex is right at the forefront of this unavoidable change.
Finally, let's turn our attention to valuation analysis. Is the premium justified?
The big question for investors.
Inditex's valuation clearly reflects its status as a high-quality, profitable market leader, and as such, it commands a premium over many of its peers. But the key question for investors, and for us today, is whether this premium is truly justified given the moderating growth outlook and the emerging industry challenges we've just discussed.
Is the price right, basically?
Let's look at some relative valuation multiples. As of mid-2025, Inditex trades at a trailing 12-month, or TTM, meaning the last 12 months, price-to-earnings PE ratio somewhere in the range of 23x to 25x.
Okay, mid-20s PE.
Its TTM enterprise value to EBITDA multiple is approximately 11.9x, and its price-to-sales multiple is around 3.4x. For historical context, the current PE is broadly in line with its historical average.
Not crazy high, not super low historically.
Right. It's normalized from those wild post-pandemic peaks where it went over 60x in 2021, but it's still above prior lows, which were around 18-20x in 2019 and 2023. So it's not cheap, but not at its most expensive historically either.
How does that stack up against the competition?
Good question.
When we compare this to its peers, Inditex consistently trades at a valuation premium to H&M, its closest direct competitor. And that premium seems well supported by Inditex's superior and more stable profitability metrics, those gross and EBIT margins we discussed, and its demonstrably higher returns on capital.
Pays to be more profitable.
Absolutely. Fast Retailing, the owner of Uniqlo, however, often trades at a significantly higher PE multiple, sometimes in the range of 34x to 38x.
Much higher than Inditex. Why?
That can largely be attributed to its different growth trajectory and its strong positioning in those high-growth Asian markets, which the market sees as having maybe greater future potential. Plus, perhaps Uniqlo's basic value proposition is seen as less subject to the whims of fashion.
Interesting distinction.
So the market appears to value Inditex as a quality compounder, a company that can consistently generate high returns on capital and steadily grow earnings over time, rather than relying on explosive, inconsistent bursts.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Or rather, high quality and steady. The company's 39% return on capital employed in FY 2023 is a core pillar supporting this view and its premium valuation. Analyst consensus forecasts anticipate annual earnings growth of approximately 7.5% in the coming year.
Okay, 7.5% growth expected.
Yeah. While this is solid for a company of its size and maturity, it does represent a deceleration from the robust post-pandemic recovery period we observed. It signals a shift to a more steady growth phase.
And the dividend plays a role too, right?
Definitely. The dividend component provides a significant part of the total shareholder return. The forward dividend of 1.68 per share equates to a yield of roughly 3.1% to 3.7% at recent share prices.
That's a decent yield.
It's an attractive yield for a company with Inditex's financial strength and growth characteristics, offering both stability and income.
So, wrapping up the valuation thoughts.
The concluding thought on valuation is this. The current market valuation reflects a consensus that Inditex is indeed a high-quality, durable business with a strong and defensible competitive moat. That justifies its premium relative to most retail peers. It appropriately prices in the company's superior profitability and those high returns on capital.
Okay, the quality is recognized.
However, it also appears to have priced in a moderation of the high growth phase we've seen in recent years. Critically, the valuation does not seem to reflect a worst-case scenario of severe margin compression or a permanent stall in growth.
Meaning there's downside risk if things get worse.
Exactly. It makes it potentially susceptible to downward revisions if the recent sales slowdown persists or deepens, or if those sustainability costs bite harder than expected. The valuation is thus a careful balance between the market's appreciation for proven quality and an acknowledgement of a more challenging but evolving growth outlook.
So understanding valuation helps you see how the market perceives a company's future. For Inditex, it's about balancing its undeniable strengths and consistent quality with the emerging risks and a more challenging growth outlook that demands strategic adaptation. The market is weighing future potential against current realities.
A constant balancing act.
And that brings us pretty much to the end of our deep dive into Inditex. We've explored its remarkable journey from an agile, fast fashion pioneer to an omnichannel leader. We've highlighted its unique integrated model, its exceptional financial strength, and its ongoing strategic adaptation in a rapidly changing world.
And to reinforce the key takeaways, Inditex really does seem to be at a strategic inflection point. Its core competitive advantage is evolving. It's maybe less about being the absolute fastest in the market anymore.
Shein might have taken that crown for now.
Perhaps. It seems more about leveraging its incredibly integrated network to deliver a superior, more flexible, and truly brand-enhancing customer experience. And undoubtedly, the most significant long-term structural risk it faces is that increasing wave of sustainability regulations.
A big challenge.
This represents a necessary and potentially costly evolution of its business model that will define its future trajectory and how it continues to thrive, or perhaps struggles, in the years ahead.
So, what does this all mean for you as a consumer and observer of the global economy? Consider how Inditex's journey reflects the broader struggle of all businesses, and indeed our society, to adapt to relentless digital disruption and the increasing unavoidable responsibility towards our environment.
It's a microcosm of bigger trends.
Playing out in real time, right in the stores we shop in.
Which raises, I think, an important question for all of us. As consumers, when we choose to engage with companies like Inditex, are we inadvertently contributing to the pressures that force these global giants to redefine their very existence? The pressure for speed, for low cost, or are we actually the driving force that can ultimately push them towards a more sustainable and integrated future through our purchasing power and our demands?
A powerful thought to consider the next time you browse a fashion store, whether online or in person. What role do our choices play? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Inditex. We encourage you to observe these fascinating trends in your own shopping habits and consumption choices, and to see how these global shifts play out right in front of you.